Lumos. Hello, friends. Welcome back to Shell Cottage Radio. I'm your host, Ezra, a.k.a. Bill, also known as your friendly tech wizard and former captain of the Hufflepuff Quidditch team, the Flannel Wizard. Yours truly, me. Please welcome your lovely design witch, the fascination of fourth year, and my wonderful co-host and yours, Lottie, a.k.a. Fleur.
Heya, schön, dass ihr da seid. Willkommen zurück to our little cottage on the outskirts of Tinworth. Come on in. This is the 29th episode of Shell Cottage Radio, in which we will discuss Chapter 4 of Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets at Flourish and Blotts. And today we have, thanks to Melissa, who first introduced us to her videos, another special Potter creator as a guest on our podcast. She is an actress and comedian known on TikTok, Instagram, and other platforms as Magic by Michaela. She creates mostly Harry Potter and Star Wars themed short videos, but also sketches within other fandoms. Welcome to the cottage, Michaela.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's so good to have you here. You know, we did a little bit of a mini introduction, but we love to ask our guests to introduce themselves a little bit. So, Michaela, who are you? What do you do? Also, where did you just return from?
I'm Michaela. My username is at Magic by Michaela, and I make fandom content, but mostly Harry Potter videos. And I really like making comedy videos. So I really like making funny Harry Potter skits. And I just came back from a fun event. This was actually my first event as a creator. Mm-hmm. That I went to. So I got to fly to LA and I went to Box Lunch's holiday gala. If you don't know what Box Lunch is, they sell really cool fandom merch. And yes, they were having this charity gala to support Feeding America. So that was really fun to be able to, you know, be part of a good cause for my very first creator event I've been to.
That is amazing. I mean, first of all, your videos are hilarious. Like, we love watching your videos. They're so funny and they're super entertaining. And we just love even like scrolling back to the old videos. It's so cool. And also that you went to Box. I mean, they are most of the time they are like in we can find them in malls, right?
Yes,
we love going there and just checking out what kind of merch they have. And they have a lot of Harry Potter stuff too.
They do. Yeah, and really like Harry Potter stuff.
Star Wars and Ghibli, right? Studio Ghibli and all that stuff. And it's perfect. Their name is Box Lunch, and they did like a gala to feed America.
Yeah, and they actually that's why they're called Box Lunch, because that's part of their whole company, is to every $10 people spend, they donate like one meal. So that's sort of what they were founded on. So yeah, that was exciting to be able to be a part of that. And Simu Liu from Shang-Chi was there, and I'm a huge fan of his. So
yeah, that was wild.
I was losing my mind.
Yeah, that's a great movie. He's awesome. I saw your post about that, and I was like, what? Where is Michaela at? What is she doing?
So that is so amazing. Yeah. And did you like? Did they send you an invitation to that?
They did.
Yeah.
And
did you go? Did you get to go with a friend or?
I did. So I actually went with my friend Vince, who I know from the Harry Potter trivia show that was on HBO. I wasn't on it. He ended up making it to the show. I didn't, but we became friends through that. And I just thought, you know, if I'm going to a fun fandom event, that's the friend to take, because he also.
That's awesome.
Interesting. Yeah. I wonder, did you ever come across Tiffany? Is that the same event? Tiffany?
Yeah, it was the same one. So we had our friend Tiffany from the Swish and Flick podcast. She's one of their hosts. She tried to get on, same thing. I think she was updating people and got to the final sort of, I don't know if it was like round or whatever. And then ultimately didn't make it.
Yeah.
But it was like, I was like, you're doing what? Where? Like, what's going on? So cool.
Wait, so you tried out for the trivia show?
I did. And I made it to the final six for Ravenclaw. So we all got flown out to LA and we got to spend a week in the hotel hanging out with each other. It was just so much fun. It kind of felt like a little mini Harry Potter convention.
Yes.
Yeah. And so they only picked three out of the six. So I wasn't one of the three, but I still got to watch the show being filmed. And, you know, we all became really great friends from the experience. So it was amazing.
Yeah. Wow. That's actually so really cool.
And it's always different, you know, when you get to meet each other in person and hang out for a little bit, and you know, it's different than just knowing each other from social media, from the internet. Right. I bet that was fun. How many days was that? Was that just a weekend or how long was that?
So it was a little less than a week. I think we were in LA.
Oh, wow.
And
okay.
Because they had this final casting session, they picked out outfits for all of us in case we were going to make it to the show. And we actually didn't know who was going to be picked until we were seated in the audience and they called out people's names. So it was genuine surprise when they picked people. But we had become such good friends at that point that even those of us that weren't picked, we were just still so excited for our friends who got chosen because we were all rooting for each other. So it was really great, you know. But Potter fans are always so supportive and friendly. It's really nice.
Yeah, we learned that too. And we love the community, just like the Star Wars community. It's a really, really good community to be in. And everyone's really friendly and you can just be yourself. And we love that about it.
Yeah,
we were actually going to ask you, how did you come across Harry Potter? When did you first, you know, either read your first book or saw the first movie? And how did you go from there?
So I was actually, I feel like I was just slightly late to the game when it comes to fandom. So I started reading when I was 12. So I was about the right age. But Harry Potter had been popular for a few years before that, before I got into it. I actually didn't start reading the books until after I saw the fifth movie. There was something about the fifth movie.
Yeah.
And that's why Order of the Phoenix is my favorite book and movie, because something about that movie just really made me want to read the books.
Yeah.
And so I, you know, my mom, every time she went grocery shopping, she used to drop me off at the library because I used to love to just sit in the library and read books.
Aww.
After I saw the fifth movie and she dropped me off in the library when she was grocery shopping, I picked out Order of the Phoenix and I started reading it. And then I took it home and I got about maybe, you know, a third of the way through when I realized I need to start this series from the beginning. I need to read this from the start. And that's sort of how I fell in love with Harry Potter. So I have a very special place in my heart for the fifth book and movie because that was my entryway into the fandom.
Oh, that's awesome. I actually, the fifth book was actually the first book that I owned myself because the first four books my mother always gifted to my brother when he, you know, when was Christmas or his birthday, he got the new Harry Potter book. And then I asked for Christmas for the fifth. And my brother was so upset because he was like, you know, my mom's like, why are you upset? It's in the family. You can read it. And he's like, no, I want the book, not my little sister.
Oh gosh, that's so cute.
Yeah, I was very proud because it's also the biggest, like the thickest book. So
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long book.
Okay, so we also wanted to ask you, and I think so if anyone's watching the video version of this, they'll already kind of know. But just for our audio listeners, what is your Hogwarts house?
So I am a Ravenclaw. I took the I took the sorting test on what was then Pottermore about 4 times and I got Ravenclaw each time. So I'm a very solid Ravenclaw.
Okay. Okay. Solid. Wow. Yeah. Lottie is as well. And she's over here. I think that's why she likes you so much. She's just like, So, and I'm a Hufflepuff in case you didn't know. So I'm very,
I love Hufflepuff.
We need more Hufflepuffs in the world. So I'm always encouraging people to, you know.
Yes, definitely.
Even as a Ravenclaw, I think Hufflepuff is objectively the best house. I think we should all want to be Hufflepuffs.
Yeah, right?
Okay, you know, Michaela, now I also, you're like my number one Harry Potter content creator out there. Okay, you know what? I just, that makes me feel so good. Hufflepuff, we're chill. We like to eat food. We like to hang out. We like to party, you know, what? Have a good time. I don't know who would want to be friends with us.
And I know.
I mean, also Cedric, you know? I mean, come on. He's like representing everybody in the Triwizard Tournament. It just, I don't get why. I was I'm sorry to interrupt this. I was at Halloween, just happened. We're both teachers. I'm walking through, I don't even know if I told you this yet, sweetie. I was walking through the school with my robes on, with my Hufflepuff robes. And I had some students say to me, you know, that's not even a real house, right? That's a joke.
Oh, what?
And I was like, whoa. So I was pretending to be a Hogwarts student. I took that robe off and said, come here, young man. And so detention slip comes out. You know? It was crazy. But I was like, I can't believe the people who diss Hufflepuff, I just don't understand it.
No, people disrespect Hufflepuff way too much. And Hufflepuff is the best house. You know, it's just, it's jealousy. Everyone wants to be Hufflepuff.
Yeah, that's probably why. Yes.
Well, do you think you have a second house, Michaela?
Oh, that is that is, you know, people ask me that a lot, and I genuinely don't know. I feel like I'm a pretty solid mix. Yes, you can.
Because I had you not have worn the shirt and everything today, I was thinking you were like a Gryffindor. I thought you were like, and maybe it's because I see all of your content where you are pretending to be Gryffindor or you're Harry or whoever and doing stuff, you know. So, but I also think you get that Gryffindor spirit a little bit too. So
thank you. I definitely do identify with that sort of Gryffindor spirit, and you know, I do maybe unfortunately identify a bit with how they all sort of want, you know, glory, and they, you know, they're all sort of like that. But I'm not very brave. I jump when the toaster goes off. I do not have bravery.
Maybe we have a Raven Wren.
Raven. Oh, I like that.
It's always weird, though, if Slytherin is your second house, it doesn't make a good name. You know, like
all those crossover hybrid names. Ravenpuff.
But
Ravenpuff. Like, Ravenpuff is a cute one.
It is.
Yeah.
Actually, I am a Ravenpuff.
Wow.
Yeah, Lottie's very much a foodie.
It was very funny when we first met. We actually talked about our Hogwarts houses, and I told Ez that Ravenclaw was always my number one, because for some reason, when I watched the first movie, I just felt no one was talking about Ravenclaw, but somehow I felt so drawn to that house. You know, like everyone obviously liked either Gryffindor or Slytherin. Hufflepuff, I guess, was also one of the houses that was, you know, one of the minor houses, but no one really talked about Ravenclaw in the first movie.
Yeah,
there was no character that was in Ravenclaw that you could kind of relate to, but somehow I don't know why I was immediately, they sold drinks in like the house, like in cups with the house on it, right?
Yeah.
And I begged my mom to get me one of those because I wanted to take it home. It was a Ravenclaw cup. And I took...
You're a true Ravenclaw.
I think I am. But I got on the Pottermore test, I got a Hufflepuff once and Ravenclaw once. And then I told Ez, he was like, oh, I'm not so sure if you're really a Ravenclaw. And I'm like, let's settle this once and for all. And I took another one live with him.
Yeah, I was watching.
He was watching me answer the questions. And I was like, I'm going to answer them truthfully. Not, you know, sometimes you feel like you can guess which answer is, you know, stands for which house. And I was like, no, I'm answering them as I really feel like, you know, the answer would be. And he's like, that is never going to be a Ravenclaw. The answers were totally not Ravenclaw.
I literally think every question was like, do you like food? And she was like, yes. This is like, yeah. And I was like, there's no way that's coming out to Ravenclaw. But I mean, obviously.
It was Ravenclaw. Yeah.
It's meant to be your Ravenclaw.
Yeah. And I mean, we have the best common room. We have the best view up there.
We do. And all the ceiling with the stars. Amazing.
Extra question I just kind of thought about, because Lottie's very much into ambience videos. Have you seen any of the ambience videos on YouTube where they do the common rooms and stuff like that? Do you ever play those?
I used to, when I was in school, I used to play those in the background while I was studying, because it just gives me so much motivation. Yeah, right? Yeah. It's like when I'm doing my normal schoolwork, that's boring. I don't want to do that. When I'm pretending I'm doing Hogwarts schoolwork. No, yes. That's motivating.
Yes.
Yeah.
I survived college because of the videos.
Right.
That's cool. Okay. Okay. A couple more questions here. We've got favorite book. And I think you've already kind of talked about that a little bit, right? So favorite book/movie is essentially Order.
Yes. Yeah. It's funny. I feel like a lot of people say they don't like that one because it is long. And I do know that parts of it toward the middle end sort of start to drag. But I just feel like that book has some of the most world building. It really, I think the length, it feels the most immersive. You really feel like you're going through the school year with Harry.
Yes. Yep.
And I also feel like that's one of the books and movies that has the most clear character arc for Harry. There's like a really well-told story within that book.
Okay. Yeah. Nice. So would your movie be the same? So you still feel like because you said that's the one you saw first, right?
Yes.
Okay.
I do really like Michael Goldenberg as a screenwriter. Steve Kloves wrote the rest of them, and he only wrote the fifth movie. That's the only one that wasn't written by Steve Kloves. And I just really like the way he characterizes like Ron and the other characters. I feel like he did a great job. So I really like his writing the best.
Okay, nice. Wow, okay, that's cool.
Well, that's so interesting to hear, you know, from a screenwriter's from a perspective where you're interested in the writing because I was just on a podcast about Rings of Power and we were a mix of different guests on there. And one of them, she is a screenwriter, or they have a screen or a podcast where they analyze films or movies from the perspective of a screenwriter. So I learned a lot about that and learned to appreciate that more through her. So that's cool.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. We'll have to check that out.
Yeah.
You understand a little bit about it because you're an actress yourself, right?
I am. Yeah. I mean, I'm not by any means a screenwriter, but I do act. Yes. I mostly just do commercial acting because where I live, that's the market here. That's the work that's available. But yeah, I do act for my main job.
Yeah.
Michaela, random question. My buddy, and this is a shot in the dark here. It might not be, but there's a commercial director. He's a commercial director. His name is Jordan Brady. He directs a lot of different commercials. That's kind of what he lives in LA, but I'm not sure if he does sort of the same thing. But anyways, he has a great podcast on directing commercials. And my old co-host, Matt, it's his cousin. So he does a lot of commercial directing. And it's crazy the amount of work that goes into those and the stuff that you have to, people don't realize how much is involved in those commercial shoots. So
it is funny when you do a shoot for 2 days and then it's a 15 second commercial, right?
Yeah.
It's like a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. So you were just, what was the one? Because you had a great Q&A going the other day on your Instagram. Is that still up or is it something?
It is. It's under my highlights, my story highlights.
Your highlights. Okay. So I encourage people to go check that out because you answered a lot of different questions there too. And so we're just kind of hitting a few here, but that I was watching all of those. What was the one? I feel like there was a product that you were in or something. And I looked at Lottie and I was just like, oh my God, like that's just because she's from Germany. And so me being here, it was something that I recognized. I have to go back and look and see, but I just was shocked at how I did not know that you were in commercials and stuff like that. I just knew you as a Harry Potter content creator, and which I think is freaking awesome. And then there's this whole other thing. You live out, on the West Coast there in that world. I just think it's cool. It's a whole different, world. It's a different type of job. So yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, no, it's really fun. I feel like a lot of the acting work that I did sort of transfers very well to content creation.
Yeah.
I mean, and even just on the technical side, like I had all the equipment that I have for auditions, like my ring light, my camera and everything. Mm-hmm. So things really came in handy when I started making content. So it sort of fed into that very nicely.
Yeah.
I was going to ask, did acting get you into content creation? Is that how you came up with the idea, or was it almost like you started creating funny videos, almost for yourself because you thought why not, and then kind of took off?
Yeah, I didn't know that there was, the Pottergram, that Harry Potter Instagrams or fandom Instagrams were even a thing until I did the Tournament of Houses show. And the finalists, and on the show, there were a few people there who were Harry Potter content creators or, Disney, other sorts of content creators. And I saw what they were doing on Instagram and I was like, wow, that looks really fun. You can just have a whole page dedicated to something you're passionate about. So that's actually when I started my Harry Potter Instagram, was about a year ago, right after we LA for the show. And then I sort of started out trying to do more like aesthetic Harry Potter posts. And I very quickly realized that was not my niche. That wasn't my thing. Like I'm not good at making pretty photos and stuff. So when I discovered Reels, I was like, oh, I can make videos. This is something that I can do. I can't do pretty photos, but I can do funny videos. That's within my skill set. So then,
That is so cool. Cause I mean, it's so good to hear though, that you kind of started out with something different, and then along the way you found out, okay, maybe that's not what I 100% want to do, but you had to go through that to end up where you are right now. And even now, it's not, the journey's over, but like you're still trying to probably improve your videos or find new things to film, and that's so cool to hear that it's not just you wake up one morning and you have that brilliant idea and it's all there and you just start out, but it's a journey. I'm trying to find the right word, like a straight
evolution,
path. We're still trying to figure out.
Yeah.
Sorry, what were you gonna say?
I said it's a learning process.
Yeah.
And I'm still learning things as I'm doing it, which is really fun.
Michaela, as I watch some of your videos, are you naturally like You clearly have a good sense of humor because a lot of your stuff is really comedy driven. Is that what you're into? Is that like if you as you look for even other roles, because commercials a lot of times too have to have that funny, you know, element that's like gotcha, get you to chuckle. And what was that product? And then you kind of like do the whole thing. Is that kind of because I feel like that's a lot of what you do. Is really gotcha, make you laugh, really silly kind of. I don't know. Just every time it's just like it's even if it's not laugh out loud, it's all the time. I'm always like I'm grinning. I'm like that's funny. That's clever, you know. So.
Yeah, no, that is what I do mostly within my acting career is within the commercial sphere. I mostly do comedy. That is okay. What I'm mostly hired for. So. become my niche in my acting career is doing funny commercials, which is nice yeah. because sometimes the commercial work can be, I don't want to say boring, but a lot of the times when, you know, the script is just selling a product, it can be more slow. So when there's comedy in it, then it's really fun. Then you can play with it, which I really like.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. That's
can awesome. I just say real quick, like, okay, maybe you have a different favorite video, but like my favorite video that you made is the one I'm trying to find here. The funniest thing Harry said to Snape.
Oh,
I yeah. just so remember reading the scene and I was like, oh,
yeah.
It was so funny in the way you acted up. So yeah, if you haven't, you know, the listeners haven't already, please check out The Funniest Thing Harry Said to Snape by Magic by Michaela. It's so funny. Yeah,
thank good. You. It's, you know, it's actually, I feel like my job in when I'm making these videos is very easy because there's so much comedy already inherent in those situations in the book that we didn't get to see a lot of those scenes in the movie, but it's already really funny in the book. So then just translating it, you know, trying to make it funny in a video is really right. easy for me because it was already hilarious the way it was written. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. One that you just did recently was, it was like, I think it was Leia and Luke. Did you just do something on?
Oh yes.
I on just like Leia. That. Yeah. And you just kind of clipped up a few different things. It was funny. It was sort of what Leia was doing when she was 10 years old versus Luke staring down the barrel of that lightsaber. So
he's trying his best. Yeah, I actually, that video just came about because I bought the little droid that Leia has in Kenobi, you know, Lola. Oh, and I was like, I really want to make a video with this. So that's sometimes how the ideas come about. It's like something so random that just sort of inspires the video.
Right, right. That's amazing. I love that. And actually, speaking of Star Wars, before Lottie takes back over here, and I just have to ask real quickly, do you have a favorite Star Wars movie or piece in Star Wars? Because I'm a huge Star Wars fan. I've got my Yoda. This is I don't know if you can see this behind me. I've got like a picture of Yoda from Star Wars Celebration.
Oh,
and he's like meditating. The Force is speaking to him. The title of this, I can send you a screenshot of, or a picture of this later. Down here it says "Train him, I will." And it's sort of like before Luke ever even shows up to see Master Yoda, Yoda's already speaking. Like the Force is kind of calling out to him and telling him to train Luke. But anyway,
That's cool.
Yeah, it's sort of it's a crazy thing. But what your favorite movie or even TV series? What do you like in Star Wars? Real quick, and this is just guilty pleasure me right now.
Oh no, I'm so glad you asked. I love talking about Star Wars. My favorite movie is definitely Rogue One. Rogue One is just, it's so well done. You know, it's one of those, I feel like with some of the shows and stuff we get nowadays, it feels almost like they're making this story just to make the story because it's popular, or, you know, just to sort of get attract viewers to watch it. But Rogue One is one of those stories that actually just is a story that's trying to say something. It's a story that adds to the universe that after you watch Rogue One and then you go back and watch A New Hope, it makes it that much better. So Rogue One, such a special place in my heart. And then I'm a big fan of the show. So I really love the Clone Wars. I really love Rebels. Ahsoka is my favorite character. So I have a special place in my heart for Clone Wars.
Yeah. Okay. That's awesome. So yeah, I mean, if you want to do any, I mean, I love your Star Wars content. So if you want to, you know, keep doing some more of that, I'll definitely be checking it out. Cause it's just so fun. It's cool. Like Harry Potter and Star Wars and these fandoms that were meant to inspire kids and whatever, they feel so good together. So I was really happy to see that you did both. And Ahsoka's amazing. We're actually doing a Rebels rewatch. Lottie's only seen 1 through 6 and she's working her way through Rebels right
Spoiler
now.
Spoiler free, because I have not seen.
Oh my gosh. Oh,
I know.
That. I wish I could experience for the first time again.
Right. I know. It's crazy. I'm so stoked for it. We're starting season 2 now. So by the time we get to 3 and 4, Lord have mercy, we're going to be tears. There's going to be all that stuff going on.
I'm excited now.
Yeah. But
be prepared. Be emotionally prepared.
Right. Okay. Two more. Just real quickly. We need Michaela's favorite.
Yes. But wait. I have to apologize real quick because I made a mistake because I was talking about that one video. But I actually meant the one where he's where Harry said to Snape, no need to call me sir, professor, or professor. That one. It's little bit older. I just apologize that I reference. I mean, both of them are hilarious, but I saw that the other day, and it's back. You posted that back in August, at the end of August.
Yeah,
that's
the one where
That was my fault because I had titled the video you were referencing the funniest thing Harry said to Snape, and especially on TikTok, people rightfully commented like, "No, that's not the funniest thing. The funniest thing was there's no need to call me sir." And I'm like, that's fair. I think by when I say funniest, I meant the funniest dumb thing that Harry said was my nickname is Runel Wazlip. The funniest clever thing he said was there's no need to call me sir. Have to make that distinction.
Oh my gosh. Great. I just love experiencing the movies are great and we love them for what they are, but going back experiencing the books again, even this chapter, oh my gosh, I can't wait to dive into it because there's so much stuff that we don't see in the movie. So let's quickly talk about your favorite character of the series.
So my favorite character is Luna. But I feel like I have to make the distinction. I adore Movie Luna. Movie Luna is also one of my favorite characters. But when I say my favorite character is Luna, I'm very specifically talking about Book Luna and just her completely unhinged ideas. She's just, I love Movie Luna, but I think Book Luna is so much more unhinged and just so much more off-putting. And I just love that about her. I love that because I feel like in the book when she's so much stranger, the fact that she's unafraid to be herself is much stronger of a quality because you can see why people would be off put by her in the books and she doesn't care. And I love that about her.
Yeah, good point.
That is a really good point. Cause I mean, like you said, Ivana Lynch really like, have you read her book by any chance?
I haven't. I should do that.
It is really super interesting, super emotional. Cause she dives into very controversial topics there about eating disorders and all that kind of stuff. But the insight she gives you on, you know, like mental health and all the how she got into, I mean, she was a fan herself when she auditioned. She never would have dreamed that she would actually be able to play Luna to be Luna for essentially, because she said, I mean, a lot of people say that about her. And that's what we actually just read we're reading Tom Felton's book now. And he said the producers, they try to cast people who are actually the almost like the kids are very close to the characters in real life. And they did that
with natural, more organic.
Right.
And they kind of embodied some of what those characters, some of, obviously not all, because like Michaela's pointing out, you've got the book characters can be so different, but there's some of it that they definitely tried to put into their casting, which is hard to find know, kids that you think sort of already kind of embody that.
They did such a great job. Especially with casting children, it's really hard. Yeah. And they really did a great job with the casting.
Yeah.
I mean, especially with Ivana, she was a fantastic Luna.
Yeah.
She was amazing.
Right.
Agreed. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then a little bit more tricky, the question, which character do you identify most with in the books?
I'm Ooh, okay. Well, this isn't from the books, technically. I mean, this isn't kind of from the books, but I'm going to say Newt from Fantastic Beasts. So he technically is a book character, but his personality from the movies specifically, he's also
Let's say from the Wizarding World.
Yes, from the universe. Yeah. I also love animals. I actually worked in a zoology museum for a few years, and so I totally relate to his magic zoology, career.
Yeah.
But just his whole personality.
Yes.
When I watched Fantastic Beasts, I was like, oh my gosh, that's me. Because I you know, and I feel like not many people may know that about me, because I think especially online and in my videos, I come off as much more like confident, much less awkward. But I'm so awkward in real life. I like can't make eye contact with people. I'm just like sitting in the room petting the dog while everyone else is socializing. So I just really related to Newt's awkwardness with people and how much he loved animals. Yeah, I love him as a character. That was
Wow, it was great.
It was great to have such an unconventional, you know, heroic lead of the story. It was just this zoologist who just wanted to go around and help animals. That was great.
See, I'm just hearing all this Hufflepuff love, and it just makes my heart happy. So
we love it so much, and we love Newt so much, and we actually really enjoy Fantastic Beasts, and we hope that they, you know, continue it. But for all our listeners who cannot see it, Michaela has a Niffler and an owl in the shot. Exactly. So
I have a blue truffle too, but he's not here because his leg fell off. He's recovering.
Oh. I remember seeing a bow truckle in one of the shops when we went down this year. Earlier this year, we went down to Orlando to go to the Wizarding World there, and we saw the whole shop was full of stuffed animals, and they had different, because of Fantastic Beasts. And when did the last movie come out? Last year? How long is that ago? When did the Dumbledore come out, this year or last year?
Yeah, it was this past, Secrets of Dumbledore?
Spring,
this spring. Yeah.
That's right, because we watched it together. Yeah, okay, yes. Yeah. Because that's why it was still full of Fantastic Beasts, which was awesome, yeah. They're my favorite part of the movies. They're awesome.
Right.
That's one of the best things to come out of the Fantastic Beasts movies is all these Fantastic Creature merchandise that we can get. It's just so cute.
Right. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. This was so much fun. I wish we could continue this for like another hour, but we also want to talk a little bit about the chapter. Before we dive into the chapter, though, I have three teeny tiny trivia questions for you, Michaela. And they're, like I said, now that I know you've been to the trivia show or like tried out for the show, I think they're pretty easy, but maybe the third one is a little harder, but we'll see.
I have the worst memory. I studied really hard for the trivia. Like if you had asked me trivia last year after I'd studied for the show, I would have answered anything, but I have the worst memory now. Now I'm just like, what's his name? Harry Potter? What? So what are your expectations?
I know, I get you though. So no pressure.
Well, so my forte is Star Wars, and so Lottie kind of it's almost like she's the Jedi Master and she's training me in Harry Potter. So it's sort of like as we go through this, I'm sort of like, because we're doing the reread because I read the book series numerous times, but I hadn't read it in years. And I was like, we get so caught up watching the movies, it's so easy to put it on that we're like, we need to, you know, get back in it. So yeah, she always is challenging me with questions, and half of them I know, half of them I don't. Probably more than half, I don't know. And I make crazy guesses, but I'm down. Let's do it. Let's do it. Yeah.
Okay. Yes. First question, and this is, you know, you're a Ravenclaw, so first question: how do you get into Ravenclaw's common room?
Oh, okay. So you have to answer a riddle to get in, which, you know, I feel like I love riddles. So that's a very Ravenclaw quality of me. But I feel like if I was running late to class and I forgot my book, I need to run back in to get it. And then I'm asked a riddle.
Yes.
I would be a little mad. I'd be like, no, just let me in.
Right.
Oh, my goodness. I am totally with you because I remember reading about that. I forget in which book they mention it. How to get in, but I was like, I was so like embarrassed almost. Like, I think I would just be stuck outside like Neville all the time. I riddles are fun, but I totally would think for hours until someone comes by and finally lets me in. I could not, especially under pressure. I don't know, like you said, you're running late or you really just want to get in and get something real quick, or you're tired and you just want to go to bed. So that was interesting to me too, that they ask you a riddle every time. And I mean, the good thing is they explain it later. So even if you don't know it and later you find out the right answer because some of the other Ravenclaws comes by and knows it, you learned something.
Right.
Now you know.
Yeah.
I bet all the, oh, sorry.
I was just going to say that's cool. You know, encourages that students to work together to figure out riddles and stuff. I think that's kind of fun.
That is actually, yes. And I bet the Ravenclaws nowadays, they can all run around and like ask people riddles and make fun of, not make fun of them, that's mean. But like, you know, how sometimes people want you to tell a joke or ask a riddle or, you know, come up with something cool. Yeah, but I'm glad we agree on that. Okay, the second one is funny because we actually talked about that person with our guest on Thursday. Do you remember what was the name of the old witch Voldemort stole Helga Hufflepuff's cup from?
Oh, gosh. I do, but I have to give a disclaimer. Uh-huh. When I see a word or a name in the book that my brain doesn't know how to pronounce and they didn't say it in the movie, it just kind of goes into my head as gibberish. I could probably spell it for you. It's like Hepzibah Smith. Is that how you say her name? It literally just goes into my brain as like not English. The letters just are a jumble of sounds. So I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right.
I couldn't remember that at all. And so, but I think that has to be it, right?
It's Hepzibah, I think. Hepzibah Smith. Hepzibah. But okay. Perfect. I mean, totally right answer. Wait. And I get you because every time because I'm not a native speaker and sometimes I see words and I'm like, I'm so afraid to say them sometimes that people would laugh at me for mispronouncing them. Because I substitute teach and I teach everything from little kid, like elementary kids to high school. And sometimes they're like, not right away, but throughout a lesson, they will figure out, okay, I'm maybe not completely native speaker. So I'm always afraid that I mispronounce their names or mispronounce certain words that they, I don't know, in biology or something. Oh, but yeah, right. I get that fear.
Your English is like so perfect though. I wish I could speak another language the way you could speak English. I wish I could even just speak another language. I can't even do that. So I'm amazed.
Same, Michaela. I'm sort of like people don't even believe it sometimes. They're like, but my family was sort of like, no, you're messing with this. I'm like, all right, hold on, sweetie. You got to switch to German so they actually believe it.
Right, because when you said you were from Germany, after having heard you speak, I was in my head, I was assuming, oh, you must have moved here when you were like 5 or something. Like your English is 100% sounds native.
Oh, thank you. Well, I mean, we're always a product of our environment to some degree, right? So in Germany, it's just like you have English as one of the main subjects in school starting in third grade. So you have English pretty much the entire school career and you can never get rid of it. Like some students, they hate English and they can never, later on you get to choose certain subjects, but you can never get rid of English.
Right.
They're a little upset about that.
Well, she developed her Midwest accent by coming out here as a foreign exchange student.
Right. So. I was an exchange student and then I studied English in university. So I have a little background in English.
Oh, very cool.
But yeah, the whole it is a very cute sometimes when a word, I'm trying to think of one, but that you'll say it and it's totally, you know it's not right. And I'm just like, oh, that's just so.
Oh, yeah. For the longest time, he made fun of me for the word situation. I don't know if I know.
Oh, you say it great now. It was back in the day. It was
situation. Is that what I said?
I forget how you said it. But
it's such a cute pronunciation, though. Oh, my God.
It's hard. Yeah, situation's hard. Yeah, there's a few of them. It's just kind of funny. But yeah, so real quick, that Hepzibah, is that her name?
Hepzibah.
Is that the one? So Voldemort kills, or Tom kills her for the cup?
Yes.
Or something? Yeah, okay.
Yes, yep.
Wow, that guy Michaela's here, because I...
That is totally not in the movies, yeah.
Right, I was like, that's a tough one. I'm always protective of our guests. I'm a little like, Lottie... I'm like that, because I think
I'm so sorry, I apologize, because I would get nervous if someone said, oh, they're way too easy, you're going to answer them in no time. No, I'm doing the same to you. I'm so sorry. Okay. The last one for me would be the toughest one.
Oh, okay.
I'm nervous.
But maybe you can figure it out together, so you can work together. Because Ez doesn't know the questions.
Yeah, I don't know.
I come up with them. Do you remember when Neville Longbottom visits his parents at St. Mungo's?
Yeah.
What does his mom give Neville as a gift? Do you remember?
Ooh. Yeah, it was a Drupal's gum wrapper, right? Is that it?
Wow. And you even said the name of the company. Of the Yes.
Wow.
I just have a gum wrapper.
I was going to say a piece of paper with something like something.
Okay. Trivia champion. That's awesome. I mean, one day my dream is to just host like a little mini trivia podcast episode with a couple of people. Oh, that would be so fun.
That'd be awesome.
We could actually make a YouTube video out of it.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Because you could like cut up a lot of like different shorts out of them.
We could have different rounds, you know.
Oh my goodness. Let's do it.
Yeah.
That sounds amazing.
We're just coming up with ideas here on the fly. Normally,
yeah,
we would play rock, paper, scissors, and, you know, to decide who has to read the summary, because it's always like so nerve-wracking to read it.
To read on camera. Take your time. Yeah.
Okay, I'll read a little bit, and then we're all kind of, I mean, you broadly know what's happening in the chapter, but I'm just going to read it real quick because it's not that long. Chapter 4, At Flourish and Blood's. Harry goes from having the worst summer of all time to having the best summer. Life at the Burrow was exciting and fun, full of magic and mischief, and delicious home-cooked meals. The Weasleys provide what Harry never had, a true family. As the school year at Hogwarts is approaching, Harry and the Weasleys are getting ready for a trip to Diagon Alley to get all their school supplies and, most importantly, the entire Lockhart book series at Flourish and Blotts. For the first time, Harry is taught how to use flu powder to travel. All he has to do is throw the powder into the fire, step inside the fireplace, and say the name of his destination loud and clearly. Unfortunately, Harry's lungs are filled with dust and ashes as he is trying to pronounce Diagon Alley. He ends up in a strange shop full of dark magical items. Quickly, he hides in a peculiar cabinet when he sees his archenemy, Draco Malfoy, and his father, Lucius, walk in. It turns out that Lucius is trying to sell some of his possessions to Borgins, the shop owner, because he fears that the ministry might soon come and search the Malfoy Manor for a dark artifact. Once the Malfoys leave Borgins and Burks, Harry sneaks out of the shop and steps into Nocturne Alley, a cold and sinister place full of mean-looking witches and wizards. But all of a sudden, Harry hears a warm, familiar voice call his name.
Harry?
Hagrid, the groundskeeper, quickly maneuvers his young friend out of Nocturne Alley and into the friendlier Diagon Alley, where they meet back up with the Weasleys and Hermione. After a visit to Gringotts Bank and a short ice cream break, the kids enter the bookshop Flourish and Blotts. The place is packed and full of middle-aged witches who can't wait to meet their favorite author and household hero, Gilderoy Lockhart. The good-looking wizard knows how to pose and smile in front of the camera, and as soon as he spots Harry Potter, he doesn't hesitate and drags his fellow celebrity into the spotlight. Lockhart announces that he is going to be Harry's Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher at Hogwarts and generously presents him with free copies of his entire book series. Harry can't wait to get away from the cameras and immediately donates all of his free books to Ginny. Draco Malfoy sees this and walks over to tease Harry that he's got himself a girlfriend, and Ron and Ginny that they've got no money. Lucius Malfoy and Arthur Weasley enter the scene, and the two fathers get into a real unwizard fist fight. Ginny's cauldron goes flying, and they knock over several shelves until Hagrid steps in and breaks up the fight. Lucius hands Ginny her books back, and he and Draco strut out of the shop. Gilderoy Lockhart excitedly tries to convince the reporter to include the gentleman's fight on the front page, but Mrs. Weasley is furious and embarrassed, and the whole company makes their way to the leaky cauldron to travel back home.
So there we go, right? I mean, our quick chapter summary. this chapter, we're going to get Michaela's thoughts. We're going to kind of bounce around, just get different thoughts, just general thoughts, you know, on the chapter and what we think, and some kind of cool takeaways. I want to start with this, though, and I don't want Michaela to think that I'm completely crazy, but I like Gilderoy. You know he's a lunatic, and he... by the way, do you have any Lockhart content? I think you do, don't you? Do you have any? Have you done anything with him?
I haven't. And now that you see that, that's like a gold mine of comedy right there.
Uh-huh. Right. I'm just, yeah, if you need any ideas, I might be sending you just a few messages here and there.
Because
he's literally a comedian himself. Like, it's just, I mean, he doesn't mean to be, but everything about him is so ridiculous and so funny. I mean, at the end of this, like as when Lottie was reading the summary there, I'm like, oh yeah, he wants that whole fight to be, can we include that in the newspaper? I mean, just
yeah,
the guy's on a different level.
When I read that, I was like, whoa, I did not remember him, you know, that little line being in there.
Yeah,
I feel like as an adult, I can much more now appreciate how hilarious Lockhart is of a character. Just, I mean, and even in later chapters when he's trying to give Harry advice on how to be famous, it's so funny.
It is.
Yeah. Yeah. He, so the other thing too, Lockhart, I want to say this in his defense, people often come after.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about.
That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And they say, look, you got all those memory charms, all these different things, you know, that he did. He stole these different ideas, but he truly was the five-time winner of, was it Which Weekly's Best Smile or something like that?
Yeah.
Yes. Right?
Like that. That's on him. That's his smile. I mean, that's not, he didn't make that up. So he didn't memory charm anybody for that. All right. Unless maybe maybe somebody else won it and he actually did go do some memory charm and like just.
Maybe he was second place and
he got second and then he switched him or something. I don't know. Yeah. I just love him so much. I just think he's such a cool dude. And I did, like, if he wouldn't at the end, had we not have figured out that he at the very end of all of this is, you know, did some pretty radical stuff and is obliviating people, I'd have been like, all right, he's full of himself. You know, he's a person who's just full of himself and he's whatever. But yeah, I don't know. So anyway.
I love that you said, though, that some of the things we didn't catch as much or didn't appreciate as much as kids. And we now go back, read the books, and it's totally different because we talk about it all the time since we're both teachers, how our perspective totally switched from how we now see a lot of what the teacher, we kind of look at what the teachers do and what how they come and how they teach and stuff like that. It's so interesting to go back to your favorite, you know, books you used to love as a child and you still love it. I mean, for what it is, because you can always go back and find new things. It's so crazy.
I think that's the great thing is that this book is really for all ages, because when I was a kid, I was definitely reading it from the kid's point of view. And I mean, as an adult, I'm still reading it from Harry's point of view, but I can just appreciate so much more. I can appreciate like McGonagall so much more. I can appreciate the adult characters and their perspectives so much more. And it's like almost reading a whole new book for the first time. You experience it in such a different way.
Yeah absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you have any initial, like when I asked you if it's okay that we have a little chapter discussion and I announced the chapter to you, you were pretty excited. So do you have any initial thoughts on the chapter?
Oh my gosh. The Arthur and Lucius fight is just so funny. It's so funny. And like, that's another thing that, like I was saying, as an adult, I appreciate even more just Arthur completely attacking him in the middle of the bookshop. You know, that's great. I wish we had gotten more of that side of Arthur in the rest of the books, like, because he comes off as just this sort of, you know, funny little guy that likes rubber ducks and muggle stuff. And then he's punching a Death Eater in the face in the middle of a crowded shop. So great.
Hey, we even hear earlier when Molly's like, you know, be careful getting involved with Lucius Malfoy, and he's like, what, you think I can take him on?
Yeah.
That is so funny now reading that. And it's also hilarious when you earlier, that was before I saw your story. I actually have it in my notes. So we always like, you know, go on a little drive and we listen to the audiobook and we take like notes on our phones. And one of them is, the last one is literally says, Mr. Weasley and Lucius actually get into a fight. Can someone make a TikTok about it?
Oh my God.
That is in my notes. And then,
swear to God. Yeah.
I saw your story and you asked, you know, for one of the, or the next video that you should make and people should vote. And one of the options was the Lucius and Arthur fight. And obviously we voted for that one. We love to see that.
So funny. Oh my gosh, I have to make it now.
Yes, that. Please.
I mean, just the whole, there's so much comedy in reading that. And then if you just thinking about it translated to like a movie or video format, is just the whole thing of, you know, first him punching him and then one of his sons yelling, you know, get him, dad. Yeah. It was, I remember Spreader George. And then Hagrid coming in and breaking them apart. There's just so much comedy in that scene.
It is so awesome. I wonder if they did shoot something and then just didn't include the scene. Because sometimes,
maybe,
you know,
yeah. Things... Or maybe they did a different version. Or maybe they tried it and it, you never know. Because I think when I read, being a book reader, and then when I saw it, I was just like, wait, I mean, it, when it's not there, you still sort of, as a book reader, you have the knowledge that he did do that. And you're sort of like, ooh, he could have taken, you know, like you believe more in Arthur. If you'd only ever seen the movies, you don't have that extra lens to kind of go to and know that he's really got it out for Malfoy and he can take him and he'll jump him and get him in a fight, you know? So it's just something that gets cut because he's, you know, in front of his kids, in front of his family, trying to be decent or whatever in the film. So it's just interesting. There's two different ways to look at it. I love that he unleashes in the book, though. And he's just sort of like, I don't think so. Because, I mean, his family's getting insulted right there. They're like, oh, his kids are getting insulted. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And what I love about it is that the what really sort of triggers him to go in on is because Lucius is insulting his family. And then the second he says something about Hermione's parents, you know, about how, and you're associating with these muggles, like how could you sit so low? That's when he's like, it's not just defending his family's honor. Like he's ready to throw hands for Hermione's muggle parents, which says a lot to the character. And I love that.
That's such a good point.
That's a really good point. Yeah. Because I, you're right. That kind of gets lost right at the end. Cause it's sort of rushing towards that point.
Yeah.
But like, you're like, no, it's 100%. Cause they're standing back with, Mrs. Weasley, aren't they? And they were in line there, right?
Yeah.
I think Hermione's parents are out there. And so
they're definitely in the bookshop.
Yeah.
Because he's just looking at them. Yeah.
I mean,
and that's so cool that they get to go with their daughter, you know, that's.
Yeah. Actually, Michaela, we were talking about like what, you know, the idea later on, you know, when Ron and Hermione get together, like how happy is Arthur about the fact that like, because he loves talking to Harry about all this kind of stuff. And so he gets Harry right through Jenny and then also like Hermione and her, you know, her whole family and stuff. And, you know, obviously she has a close relationship with them. I just feel like I'm thinking, you know, beyond the book and what life was like around their fireplace at the Burrow. Did they ever come over, you know, all that kind of stuff.
He probably invited them.
So like, that is so fun to think about. That's just so sweet. Like Arthur having such a good time talking to Hermione's parents. That's so sweet. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. He's such a lovable character. Definitely.
Yeah, he's one of my favorites. Yeah. I mean, I think it's hard not to like the Weasleys, you know, this whole thing starts off with them and they're teaching Harry so many things. I mean, the first half of the series, really Ron is like leaned on a whole lot for in terms of like telling them little tidbits that they don't know about in the wizarding world. And I love in Deathly Hallows, that comes full circle, sort of like what's the one Babbity Rabbity. He's like, you don't know this character or that character and these different things. And it's just kind of funny that he's the one who grew up in the wizarding world and the other two did not, even though Hermione is, you know, smart as a tack. It's something that if you didn't grow up there, culturally, you wouldn't know this thing. So I love that family so much and Ron for all that knowledge. So,
And just go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Oh, I was going to just say at the beginning of this chapter, when Harry says that line about how, you know, there's all these different things about the Burrow, about it being a magical house, but one of the most different things for him is that people like him in that house. That line makes me sad reading it as an adult, like, and fully understanding, like, oh my gosh, this is the first time this boy has known what it's like to be loved in a familial situation.
Yeah.
But that is, I love the Weasleys for that, for just accepting Harry as, you know, a surrogate child, you know, sort of adopting him into the family. It was really sweet.
Yes, it made me so happy, like the first part of the chapter, and even like last chapter when they managed to get him out there, and then just the feeling of wind in your hair and leaving it all behind and being free. And then not only like leaving behind the Dursleys, but also going to the most loving family on earth, probably. That is such a good contrast and shows you, like, you know,
right.
how wonderful they are.
Yeah, for sure. Because there's that bit. And then as we're doing like a reread of this, and I'm guessing every time people, you know, every time you reread a series, you learn something new, or you catch something, or something stands out. And for me, I was always a huge fan of Jenny and Harry. Like as it goes along, you start to understand Ron and Hermione are getting together, and you're like, but what about Harry? And then Cho pops up, and then it's sort of like, whoa, what about Cho? But from the get-go, Jenny is there. That's cute. So I'm just thinking from her perspective, when Harry hands her all those books and just like, you know, does this little side whisper to her, like, here are these books, and she's been freaking out this whole time. You move right past that. But if you stop and think for a second, what did she look like as he's like handing those books to her? And she's like, the cauldron's probably shaking, like, oh my God, like, he just gave me all of his books. I mean, I just think it's so cool because she's just such a little, I don't know, just a little sweetheart. And she just loves Harry. She has a crush on him. And I don't know. I love Jenny so much. And so that whole bit is kind of going on. Last chapter, when Ron goes up and they look at his room, you see her green eyes. And then in this, I mean, one of my favorite things is when they're sitting at the table and it says that Jenny, first she knocked over the porridge or her bowl or whatever, right? And then she goes to put like her elbows on the table and just puts it right in the butter. You know, she's just like, you know, and you're like, and it's almost like nobody, and I can actually like just see that. It's almost like, what if you did that and you put your arm in the, your elbow in the butter, and you just sort of like, I hope no one notices. I'm hoping no one is, and you just, you don't draw attention to yourself. You're like, let's just ease this out of there. It's so ridiculous, but the poor thing, I just feel like she's so in love with him and just crushing hard. It's great.
It is the perfect depiction of being 11 and having a crush. Yeah. So good. And we get a really good Ginny moment in this chapter because, you know, you have the whole time she's crushing over Harry. She's being very timid and awkward and so cute. And then you have the moment where Malfoy comes over and, you know, starts trying to start stuff with Harry, and Ginny just no hesitation immediately stands up to Malfoy, like no fear, nothing. Like the second Malfoy starts insulting Harry, she's like, you're not going to talk about my man this way. Like really good snippet of her personality that we see in later books of her being this, like, you know, sort of fearless Gryffindor there, which I love.
It is so awesome. Yep. As soon as he said that, I was like, yep, that moment, I love that about her. That you can see, because Ron or the twins, they say it is so awkward to see Ginny like that, because normally she's not like that. She's not as shy.
Like in the first book, you hear her talking like out loud to her mother and different things, and you hear all these things about like wanting to go on the train and everything. And then it all just gets kind of awkward and weird and quiet when Harry is around. And we're seeing this from his perspective and he's in her presence. And so, and they're all probably like freaked out, like, what is up with our sister? You know, she's not who she normally is. So yeah, it's cool. But a couple other things too. I wanted to mention thoughts on Percy. I always forget to mention Percy. So I've been sitting here thinking, don't forget to mention Percy, because I feel like he gets forgotten a little bit. And I love Percy. At the same time, I'm frustrated with Percy throughout the series, but like in this, I forgot. So this is why it was why we do the reread. I was like, why is he spending so much time up in his room doing his thing and what's going on? I forgot that he had his fling, and I always forget her name. What is her name?
Penelope Clearwater.
Clearwater. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. He's got that whole thing going
on. And she's
on,
a Ravenclaw, by the way, I think.
Yeah.
Right. I think she is.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. So anyways, that's pretty cool. I did the teasing that goes on between Fred and George and Percy is great. Now they can't even really, he's acting a little funny, a little weird. It's such a good, because we just talked about Ginny. So you talk about Percy and how like love or having a crush or whatever affects you and how it changes you and the things that we all can kind of relate to that and remember what that was like and how we were, you know, totally bonkers over somebody or whatever. And so he's like not even boasting about all of his OWLs and stuff, right? I mean, he's kind of just rolling with it.
True.
And
at least we don't read about it. Yeah.
Yeah. No, right. And Fred and George are sort of like, what's up? You know, they're a little nervous. What's Percy up to? So, and we had a question from Michaela too, sort of about Percy in terms of he is, when they say that he's, his plan, right? I think it's this chapter where his plan is to become Minister of Magic. Is that said in this chapter?
Yes.
I think so, right? Yeah, like they're just talking about him for a little bit or whatever. And everything, like the more you come across Percy and his ambition, it's almost like of the Weasleys, he's not, I don't want to say the least Gryffindorish, but like he's sort of, he's got other different qualities that make him stand out or whatever. I wonder if it's because he's in the middle or whatever, but he definitely has a different sort of, I don't know, like personality.
Yeah. We were wondering whether he would fit better into Slytherin, and not because, you know, he turned against his family or, you know, turned bad, if you want, for a little bit, but just because he's so ambitious.
Yeah. That, I mean, that is he's a very, what would we call it? A Gryffindor. He does have, I think, a lot of Slytherin qualities, like you said, the sort of ambition. I think I would say that, though, out of the two houses, he belongs in Gryffindor, in my opinion, because of that moment in Deathly Hallows when he comes back to fight with his family. I feel like, you know, just that at the end where he's, you know, realizing that he sort of went down the wrong path a little bit, and he's putting his family ahead of anything else, you know. I feel like that, you know, coming back to fight, I feel like that's his true self, and he just got off track a little bit.
Yeah, for me, I mean, that's such a great thing, because it shows you that even if you if you believe in something or you're led astray or you make a mistake or whatever, it's really more about once that's revealed to you, once you realize it yourself, and you're sort of like, wow, okay. I mean, truly, that's all something that happens on the inside. That's you self-reflecting, saying, dang, you know, I'm really out here on a limb doing something maybe that I don't think is right. And then coming back and how you respond to it. So you're right. That's actually, that's a big thing for him is how you respond to, that situation, or just the fact that you messed up. Like we all do. We all have moments of weakness and different things. So, you know, when you can bounce back from that and say, hey, I'm sorry, or just do the right thing, then I think you're right. It definitely makes him, that's that true Gryffindor moment. And that's exactly why he was put in that house. So,
almost feel like this sort of ambition isn't necessarily an inherent quality. I feel like it's more a product of his upbringing and his surroundings. Like he's in this, I feel like it's very easy to get lost, you know, when you're in a big family, and he's in this family that is constantly looked down on, and, you know, people are very classist toward the Weasleys. They are very looked down on them for associating with Muggles. So he grew up in this environment where his family is very ridiculed in society. So I think that ambition was more of a reaction to that. Like, he's like, I've got to elevate myself in society because I don't want to go through this for the rest of my life, rather than, you know, a lot of maybe Slytherins have ambition because that's who they are. You know, they have the ambition to want to do great things, but I think that's not necessarily who Percy is. I think that was a reaction to his experiences.
That is such a good point, because I always debate whether I actually like Percy, and I feel a little bad for him because of, I know Fred and George just mean to be funny, but a little bit comes from, you know, a little jealousy, because Percy and even Ron later on get so much attention from their mom because they have good grades. They get to be prefects and have like a sort of this responsibility that they take on, and mom's very proud of them. And even Bill and Charlie, I think they both were prefects, right? And the twins are just the only ones that do something that's a little different. And they always tease Percy because he's quiet. He likes to study. He likes to be, you know, a leader in some way, but also like just on his own. He's not as social as the rest. Right. At least that's what we get. We don't know everything about him, and I think that's also not a great quality that the twins show towards their brother. I mean, it's just brothers. They're brothers, and they will always like, you know, tease one another. But I think they sometimes go a little too far with Percy.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's tough. Yeah. Okay, cool. I want to make sure we get that Percy conversation in there because I always fail to bring him up, or when I just sort of sometimes lose track of him. And so, and I think that's on me. So, okay. A couple other things here too, just that sort of, and anything that you want to, you know, just pop in whenever, Michaela, just on different stuff. Something that as we were listening today, the Hand of Glory.
Oh yeah. And we were in Bergensen.
Yeah. We're bouncing all over the place here, but you know, the Hand of Glory, I guess I just didn't remember, you know, because when you're podcasting about something or you're making content on it, you sort of pay a little bit more attention when you're doing your reread. You're trying to like get all those different nuggets, and you can use that thing. I did say you could put a candle in its hand and like the light of the candle would only work for you or something, right? I think.
Yeah. So I understood it as pretty much everyone else sees darkness, but for you, you know, you can light up a room and you would see things.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And we were kind of wondering like, if the author had some idea, you know how like you said, when you first start writing a series, if you set up a lot of different like cool little nuggets that you could bring back later on or whatever, if there was something down the line that was meant to be, or maybe it is, and I just don't remember, but I thought it was really cool because I'm like, that's kind of awesome. They're always sneaking around Hogwarts and need a bit of light and they don't want anybody else to see. That's a great thing to have. Too bad Draco didn't get that, right?
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Can you imagine?
Well, he wasn't. Now, okay, correct me if I'm wrong, but the Hand of Glory, didn't he use that, Draco did, in the sixth book when he was sneaking the Death Eaters into Hogwarts? He did the Proving Instant Darkness powder, and that's why they couldn't see him, but he had the Hand of Glory.
Oh my goodness.
I'm so glad we brought this up.
Because we were wondering.
Yeah, because he looks at, I'm thinking, because I honestly, I could not remember it, and so I think you're probably like, totally right. I can go look it up for us real quick. But because I'm like, that's a cool device. Like, why wouldn't we use that? Because she like so often does that where there's something happens in book one, book two, and it's mentioned once or twice. And then that bad boy is coming in later and we're going to use it. So that's awesome. I think you're totally right. Because
there's a couple other things in Borgen and Burks in that chapter, isn't it? When the cabinet he hides in, I don't know 100%, but I always assumed that ended up being the vanishing cabinet.
That's what we thought.
Sixth one. And then
the
cursed necklace that he, you know, gives to Katie Bell in the sixth book. We see the cursed necklace in this chapter too, which is, I thought was really cool.
It is full of little Easter eggs.
Yeah.
You're right. Like I only caught the cabinet. I'm pretty sure that's, I mean, why would it not be the vanishing cabinet? How many cabinets are in Bergensen? And I always forget the name and I'm trying to find it here, but all the words are like, you know, when you're trying to find something really quick, all of a sudden all the words get blurry and you're like, okay, brain, thank you.
Especially when it's all these made up words and names. Yeah. I do that with Lord of the Rings all the time. Just anytime there's a name or something, my brain just skips over it. I'm like, I don't know how to pronounce this.
same. I run a Lord of the Rings podcast, and that's actually the joke on that podcast is that Ez doesn't know how to pronounce anything. He's just sort of like, yeah, blah, 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 whatever. Just that one guy.
I'm reading the Silmarillion right now, and just anytime there's a name, my brain just puts a gap of sound. I read the sentence and then there's like a pause where the name is and then I keep reading because I just don't know how to pronounce anything.
Wow, Michaela, enough to put you on the spot, but I mean, we might have to circle back. We're going to be doing a reread of the Silmarillion on that podcast. I don't know if you got time, you want to come on for a chapter. We'll talk about it later, but no pressure. Anyway, because that there's so many names and terms in that. It's like, ooh.
Yeah, Harry Potter is pretty easy on that, but Borgens and Burks, right? Yeah. I got it now.
Also, the Hand of Glory is like a real, you know how like oftentimes, you know, she pulled things from real life or whatever, but the Hand of Glory is a real freaking thing. It's a dried pickled hand of a hanged man and it's on display in some museum and apparently it's got a bunch of lore. The candle that will burn, a hand holding a candle from the 18th century. So
is that like a British artifact?
Let me look at the source.
I wonder if she saw that somewhere in some museum and she's like, I'm using that for my.
That's so interesting. I didn't know that was a real thing. Wow.
Yeah. And it's been so since it's been used in a lot of different, you know, things in like supernatural and different, you know, scary movies and stuff. They've sort of referenced it or whatever. So she, Harry Potter is just one of many different things that have, you know, used it or whatever for as a special item or a magical item, which is crazy. I went to go look at, because I was trying to look up some of that stuff in book six, and I was like, wow, they're right there. It freaking is. It's a real thing. So
Oh, that's cool. I never knew that.
Yeah. It's a little scary though. I mean, it's sort of like, all right. I mean, that thing is,
Have you been to the Wizarding World of Orlando or California, Michaela?
I have. I've been to both. I like the Orlando one better because it's bigger, but I live closer to the California one, obviously. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Have you been to Nocturne Alley and Borgins and Burks?
I have. So in January of this year, I actually went to, you know, the Nocturne Alley section for the first time, because before then, I'd only been to the one in Florida like 10 years ago before they had that section. So it was really cool seeing Nocturne Alley for the first time.
Yes.
Really cool place. Very immersive.
It is. And it really, like, it ended up being, you know, not one of my favorite places, but definitely one of the places I enjoyed staying in the most, because it was just so hot. And not, when you walk into Nocturne Alley, all of a sudden everything's so nice and cool and breezy, and it's just dark. And we just sat, there's a bench on the side. We just sat on that bench for like 10 minutes and just watched other people walk by. Amazing. It was the best thing ever. I think we got ice cream from Fortescue's, and then we sat down on that bench and just watched people.
Sounds like the perfect day.
Yep. So, but I think you're right. Like, they built that so perfectly, and you feel like you could step in there and you feel like you're in the second movie, or even like the Half-Blood Prince movie. Mm-hmm. It's so cool. So,
like, just all the details and all the moving parts and the sound, and it was really, it really feels like you're in the universe. And that's almost, it almost made me disappointed with Galaxy's Edge. Have you been in Disneyland or Disney?
You didn't like it?
It's not that I didn't like it. It was, I love Galaxy's Edge. Every time I go to Disneyland, it's one of my favorite places to go to. But I feel like just with a universe as vast as Star Wars, it could have been so much more immersive. So when it feels a little bare in some places. When I went to Diagon Alley for the first time in Orlando, I was like, this feels like I'm in the universe. Yeah. Like, I could easily believe I'm a wizard in Diagon Alley, compared to, I feel like Galaxy's Edge feels a little bit more like this is a very cool part of the theme park, but I don't feel like I'm in the universe. Yeah.
Interesting.
Right. And since we're already there, and it's just going to keep, we'll get right back to the chapter.
Oh, no.
So have you ever been, we're talking about Galaxy's Edge a little bit. Have you ever been to Star Wars Celebration, which is?
I haven't.
Okay.
Because
that was out near you. It was in Anaheim this past year, I think, in the spring or whatever. So if it ever comes around, as a Star Wars fan, you should go check, because I've been to numerous of those and they're amazing. I've yet to go to Galaxy's Edge. I really want to, and I'm hoping that it's, you know, freaking amazing, which I'm sure it will be to some. Okay. Cool. But yeah, if you ever get a chance to do that, that'd be awesome. So, and I don't really know of any good Harry Potter. Like, there's LeakyCon, right?
Yes, LeakyCon is one of the biggest. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't been to that yet, but that'd be cool to go to too. So, anyways, yeah. But it's amazing how Diagon Alley and everything just really does come to life there. And this is what, you know, that's where we're at in this chapter. And so it's really kind of, if anybody gets a chance to go out there, I highly encourage people to go and just let yourself eat all the candy, eat all the different sweets.
Yeah, take your time. We actually never really went to any other. We walked through the other parts for a little bit, but we really spent most of our time in the Wizarding World.
The other parts are nice, but really can't compare.
I think also, especially as an adult, when, you know, I think the rest of the park's more for kids than the other. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, and we haven't really looked for the other things. But yeah, that was definitely the part we enjoyed the most and would always want to go back to.
Okay, couple more, just two more, right? Maybe, and then we'll kind of wrap up the discussion. I'm trying to pull them.
Oh, you highlighted that one point.
Yeah. You want to ask that one? Because I think it's a great question.
Yeah, so we met Lockhart in the bookshop, and I, you know, at this point, we still don't know that he's totally a fraud and it's not his, actually not his works. But would you have your book signed by Lockhart if you were in the bookshop and you saw him? And you, you know, we all believe right now at this point, we believe he did and wrote all these different things.
Yeah. I mean, as much as I would love to say, no, 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 that's, I'm above that. I don't need my books. I would, I would absolutely be someone in the bookshop who's getting my book signed. Because, right, you said we don't know he's a fraud. You think he did all these incredibly heroic things. And on top of that, he has a very beautiful smile. I probably would have fallen for it.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. I mean, because, he's very likable. One of the things, so we also do short videos just on our YouTube page, Harry Potter Hangout, and on TikTok. And one that I was thinking of today as we were listening to the chapter, I was like, how did he completely obliviate those people? Like, is Lockhart as bad as we think he is? Like, is he really that bad? I don't know. Like, did you look it up? Is he really?
No, I was just trying to, in the car, I was trying to tell Ez, he's like, oh, Lockhart is actually really cool. And I was like, you realize he like destroyed people's lives because he obliviated them. And Ez was like, I don't know if he really did obliviate everything. You know, if it's just that one part of their lives, maybe it's not that bad.
I'm trying to justify it. It's terrible. I'm a terrible person. You wouldn't expect this from a Hufflepuff, but I think it's just the comedy that I like him so much. And I just sort of
compassionate. And
yeah, I'm waiting for like a redemption arc coming out of St. Mungo's. I'm waiting for him to like come back and sort of, you know, have some redeeming, you know, thing. I don't know. But
yeah,
anyway,
he's a charismatic character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, we did all kind of feel bad for him when we met him in St. Mungo's.
Yeah, later it's a little bit. You forget about him, and then he's like, "You're like, oh, whoa! Like, you did that to yourself, dude." Yeah. But I mean, then it makes you think about all the things that he did to those other people, and you're like, "It's pretty bad." It's just sort of a weird,
and it's a little heartbreaking because you know it reminds you a lot of Alzheimer's disease and how people like you know forget everything about their lives, which is terrible. And
yeah.
Like, yeah. I mean, with his character, you kind of feel like he deserved it, but at the same time, then you can't help yourself and feel bad for him.
Yeah, can they not reverse any of that stuff? Like, is St. Mungo, like, that was the thing, right? He really couldn't. It was so bad.
That is so interesting. Sorry that you say that. I know it's totally off topic, but isn't it like one of the big mysteries in the Department of Mysteries where it's about the brain and everything? And I mean, because memories are something with the brain, and there's so much they still probably don't know, and different magic memory charms are really difficult to perform, aren't they? Like the
probably the because doesn't Hermione like does it to her parents, but it's not like full on, it's just erasing the memory of her specifically, right? I don't know, anyway, I just hope. It's just sort of, you know, I don't know. I'm that guy who halfway roots for him, but at the same time, he did some pretty terrible things, and I don't know. Hey, what actually though? His books still have, as Molly will say later on, doesn't it when they're at Grimmauld Place? Doesn't she still reference one of Lockhart's books?
I think she does. Yeah,
she does. Yeah. Yeah. So they still come in handy.
Right. So whoever he was copying off of, or whoever came up with those actual ideas, they were really good. So
yeah, I mean, and I feel like it is easier to feel sympathy for characters if we saw that they've sort of gotten what they deserved. Like he ended up in, you know, St. Mungo's with his memory loss. So it's kind of, when you go back and look, you don't feel as sort of, you feel a little less angry at him knowing that in the end, he sort of got what was coming for him, compared to say a character like Umbridge. We never saw her get what she deserved, you know. I'm sure at the end of the book maybe there was some sort of prosecution or not, I don't know, for what she did, but you never really saw, except for the part with the centaurs, but when we saw her in Deathly Hallows and she was prosecuting Muggleborns and everything, we never really saw her get justice. So it's stronger.
True.
She's like one of the most terrible people in the Potterverse.
I can't remember,
so well written, but yeah.
So, Michaela, have you ever seen what is it called, Downton Abbey, by chance?
No.
Okay. So, because if Maggie Smith, who plays McGonagall, she's in that, and she's in it. And at one point, I forget the actress's name who plays Umbridge. They meet each other again in it's been out for a long time, but like, yeah, they meet each other and they have a really cool conversation. Yeah. And it's totally a reference to Harry Potter and the last time they were on screen together.
It is just kind of a, I need to watch that. I have to go watch that. That's great.
Thinking about turning that into a TikTok. I don't know. I think we have not, because we couldn't pull any footage from the internet.
Yeah.
There was nothing posted yet. I mean, we could probably, yeah.
But it was fun. It was cool because when we saw it, our jaws were like, what? It was just so cool to see those two back on screen together and stuff, because the actress does a great job portraying.
Oh my gosh, she's so great.
Amazing.
And we always have to be careful when people say, you know, you hate Umbridge, but you gotta love the actress. Like, you know, the character is awful, but she plays her so well that you can't help yourself but, you know, dislike that person.
Perfect. She absolutely perfect job.
Nailed
in
it.
In that role, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Any other questions about the chapter? Any other thoughts or points there?
I mean,
last thoughts, maybe we go around the horn, just last thoughts on this chapter and then.
Yeah, it was just so awesome to go back and read it, because it was full of things I couldn't remember. Because, like you said, sometimes we just watch the movies more than we read the books. And then you remember, because it's like the actual pictures, sometimes those are the ones that get stuck in your head and you can't remember all the stuff that actually happened. And I love like things like how we start off in, you know, in the Burrow, and life is so awesome there. And then how Lockhart actually, I forgot that he announced that he's going to be the teacher at Flourish and no one knew. Like, that was the first time he actually said it in public. He's going to be the new DADA teacher. And then the whole, you know, whole thing with Lucius and Arthur. It was so awesome.
Yeah.
So great chapter.
Yeah. Great chapter. Yeah. Mikhail, just sort of final thoughts on this chapter and big takeaways.
I think one of the thing I always remember when reading this chapter is one of the things that was just a tiny change that they did in the movies was in the book when Harry's, you know, gets out in Borgin and Burks and the Weasleys don't know where he is. When they reunite with him, they're obviously very frantic. You know, Mrs. Weasley is like, oh my gosh, I hope you're like, are you okay? And they were searching for him all over. And I understand why it's like this in the movies, because you gotta condense it down. But it was always really, really funny to me, because when this happens in the movies, Hagrid, you know, and Hermione sort of drop him off at Flourish and Blotts, and Mrs. Weasley is just standing there in line for Lockhart. Like, she wasn't even looking for Harry. And then she's like, oh, Harry, oh, I'm glad you're okay. Okay, let's get the autograph. It's just so funny to me, because in the movie, she wasn't even, she was like, where's Harry? Ah, let's go see Lockhart.
Yeah.
You're right. That's true.
What they were intending, like, they weren't intending to make it like that Mrs. Weasley didn't care where Harry was. It was just like, you know, you can't include every single scene, so we have to just cut to her in the books. But that's always just so funny to me, how frantic they are looking for Harry in the books versus in the movies. They're just waiting to get their autographs. They don't care where he is.
They don't care. Yeah, they're out. Yeah, that's a good point, because yeah, we totally, they just have to condense it down. And so she's standing there transfixed by, you know, Gilderoy.
Every time I read that chapter, I always remember that scene in the movie and I crack up, because it's so funny to me.
Yeah. And for me, it's another big, every time you go to Diagon Alley, it's so much fun. It's so awesome. You go to maybe a different shop, you learn a little bit something new. And that's exactly what this, you know, book two just sort of expands on book one so well, and it just sort of builds out the world, and it's great.
And
so,
I think it's we enjoy the big story with Harry and Voldemort too, but what makes the book so great is the everyday life of a wizard and a witch. You know, like the just not grocery but book shopping, or, you know, shopping for your school supplies, or everyday life at the Burrow. I mean, everyone says they could read a lot of books and books and chapters just about the normal school life, or the life of the Weasleys, the life of the Marauders at school, like just everyday life. Give us more. That's all we want.
I feel like the best books and movies, the best stories do that. The where the universe can stand on its own outside of the story that's being told. Like the world building is just so present. Like, you know, for Lord of the Rings, I think a lot of people say this with, we were talking about Avatar: The Last Airbender, you know, you get so many of these slice of life episodes that the whole world exists outside of the story. And that's, I think that's really solid storytelling when that happens.
Oh my goodness. Yes. True. Now that you mention it, you sneaked in some Star Wars stuff. So I'm going to sneak in. Who's your favorite Avatar character?
Oh my gosh. Toph. I was obsessed with Toph as a child. She was my favorite. My first sort of cosplay that I ever did was Toph when I was a kid.
Oh my goodness. That's so cool.
Who's your favorite character?
So it's so funny. I started out loving Katara and then as the series continued, it shifted towards Toph because I just appreciated her so much more. Even though I still like Katara, but she was not my number one favorite anymore. She went through her own stuff, but I could not that I totally identify with Toph or anything, but just like the way she sees the world is so unique.
Yeah.
And the straightforwardness with Aang and just her, I just love her so much. Yeah.
She's amazing.
Yeah.
I was just looking through your Instagram again and I remembered you. Is that an avatar character?
Yes, that's one of Kyoshi. That's pro.
Oh, yes. I was Suki. Yeah.
Yes. Suki's awesome too because she's not a bender, but she is.
Didn't she kind of like. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I'm trying to remember because I have only seen it once. Lottie introduced me to The Last Airbender, and I was like, "This Uncle Iroh." I was like,
"Oh, that's true, actually." He's the best.
I cry. I haven't cried in a cartoon animated series since Rebels, and I was like, "Okay, this is amazing." So yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
But. Okay, awesome.
All right, but we don't want to steal any more of your time, Michaela. This was so much fun. Honestly, my heart is filled with joy that we got you on here.
Thank you so much for having me on. It was so much fun.
Yeah.
I mean, we had the best time. We always have the best time when we have guests because it's so much fun to get to know new people and get to hear their perspectives. So.
Yeah, and one more time, if you wouldn't mind, just where can folks find you again over on the internet?
I am Magic by Michaela. It's M-I-K-A-I-L-A because my name is spelled a little weird. It's not the normal Michaela spelling. My mom is not from this country. She did not know how to spell it. She just sounded it out when she named me. So
that's awesome.
Oh, I feel her. I know what it feels like. Where's your mom from?
She's from Hong Kong.
Oh, really? Oh,
awesome.
Have you ever been to Hong Kong?
I love Hong Kong.
I have been, I did a little bit of traveling in between my bachelor's and my master's degree. And I went from like England and then over to Asia. And I went to Seoul and Hong Kong and Vietnam. And like Hong Kong was so much fun. It was awesome.
Such a cool place.
That is so cool though. Yeah. So you still have family there?
I do. Yeah. Yeah. So that's I got to visit as a kid, which was nice.
Yeah. Wow. That is so cool. You have to go sometime.
I definitely. It's on my list. Lottie's got me. We've got a travel list. It's long. So we're heading that way. Just for folks, for listeners and everyone, we will leave links to all that down in the description. So we'll have links to all your stuff down in our description and we'll be sharing it, on the socials. So.
Yes.
All right.
All righty, Michaela.
Thanks again, Michaela. You are wonderful. Okay, just want to say thanks again to Michaela. Wonderful that she was willing to kind of come onto our podcast and chat with us. She is very positive.
Such a sweet person.
Yeah, she's so nice, and it was just really good chatting with her. Hopefully we'll get a chance to have her back on this show or maybe even on other shows that we produce. It was just, again, you could tell by the content that she produces and just who she is that she's a very sweet and just good, wholesome person,
Yes,
down to earth.
Absolutely.
And it was just really great talking to her.
And
so.
One day maybe, you never know. Maybe she will show up at one Star Wars celebration or LeakyCon. And who knows? Maybe we'll meet her in person someday and say thank you in person for just hanging out with us today.
Yeah, that'd be great. That'd be great. So, yeah, thanks again, Michaela. All right, friends. Well, that's all for this week. Thanks for tuning in to Shell Cottage Radio 94.7 COZY. We hope you'll join us in the future. We thoroughly enjoy meeting new positive Potter people that don't behave like babbling, bumbling bands of baboons.
Baboons.
If you don't want to miss out on the next episode, then be sure to subscribe to our podcast and leave us that review. Follow over on social media at Fleur and Bill.
Uh-huh. And if you truly enjoy our content, consider supporting our growing wizarding family on Patreon or Apple Premium. You will find all the links down below. Thank you so much to all our current patrons. We appreciate you to Pluto and back. Next week, we will talk about Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets, Chapter 5, The Whomping Willow. Make sure to tune back in next time. And until then, have a great rest of your week. Thanks again for joining Blur's Book Club in their little shell cottage today. We know it's not much, but it's home. Thanks again for joining Blur's Book Club in the
shill cottage. Bunch of Harry Potter shills.
Knox.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.